content of this program is intended for a blind and impaired and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Essence Magazine, November 2018 edition. And so in this this particular week, we're going to go over our cover story, Tessa Thompson. We're also going to continue on with Finnish sister stories. We're going to finish that one, and then we're going to cover It's Our Time to Heal. And it's just a series on, you know, dealing with sexual harassment, sexual abuse, and on and on. But let's go ahead and get started with... or finish, I should say, with sister stories. And that is from the Scene Edition, Focus. So building on her popular digital platform, well-read black girl, Arlington, Virginia native, Glory Edom, age 35, she releases an anthology of essays from some of your favorite writers. So Essence, they asked her some questions about, I would say about six questions or so, and then she answers those questions for them. So first question is, why did you launch Well-Read Black Girl? And her response is, for my 31st birthday, my partner made me a t-shirt that said, Well-Read Black Girl. I always have my nose in a book. When I wore the shirt in public, I was surprised at how often people would approach me on the subway or in the grocery store to talk about books. This sparked my interest in creating the Well-Read Black Girl. And it's called WRBG on Instagram account and book club. I wanted to build community around our enthusiasm for books. The response has been phenomenal. You have more than 124,000 Instagram followers. And her response is, I'm humbled by the support. Social media has allowed me to share my library with thousands of people. But that's only a part of what makes WRBG special. The in-person book club meetings and the annual festival offer a space for creative dialogue and new friendships. We're developing a powerful literary brain trust through sharing our stories. What led you to do a book? My time at Howard University prepared me to usher Well-Read Black Girl, priced at $20, into the world. I am part of the lineage of incredible talent, including Zora Neale Hurston and Toni Morrison, both of whom have also attended the Mecca. Howard was a safe space for me to learn and grow and to express myself as a black woman. Why publish this anthology now? It's an extension of our ongoing mission to amplify the voices of black women in America. Too often we are undervalued and dismissed. Reading is a form of activism. I have a unique opportunity and responsibility to uplift and share the deep emotional truths of our community. The words of Sojourner Truth serve as our ethos. Truth is powerful and it prevails. For this collection, you selected such a diverse group of writers, from Rebecca Walker to Gabrielle Sidibe. How did you curate the essays? I kept returning to the pivotal works of Zora Neale Hurston and Audre Lorde, among many others. The Black Woman in Anthology, edited by Tony Cade Bambara, along with Mari Evans' Black Women Writers. A critical evaluation was a major inspiration. The anthologies crystallized the power of the black female identity in literature and beyond. Each voice is thought-provoking, unique, and beautifully varied. This collection is filled with survivors, teachers, and visionaries. Readers give a glimpse of why Jasmine Ward loves libraries and witches, and what makes it important for Donnell Clayton to tell stories of young black girls having normal teenage experiences like kisses and coming out. What's next? On November 10th, we're holding, or this is already passed, sorry. So November 10th, that's where they held the second annual Well-Read Black Girl Festival in Brooklyn. And that's where she wrote about her love of books in a memoir. So on to our cover story, Tessa Thompson. On a misty afternoon in Artistry District, located on the east side of London, Tessa Thompson is making every moment count. It's a rare day for the boundary-pushing actress. Since appearing in Thor Ragnarok, she's not only remixed the Valkyrie's blonde hair mythology, but also expanded the Marvel Universe for black and brown girls, breaking new ground, says Thompson, who this month returns as Bianca, the rock-steady lover of Adonis, played by Michael B. Jordan in Creed II. I always want there to be one thing that I'm worried I cannot do. Obviously, I like the idea of expanding perceptions of what a woman can be and what a woman of color can be. I like to introduce new spaces. Thompson happens to be having a very good year doing exactly that. This past February, she continued her sci-fi streak in Annihilation, co-starring Natalie Portman, and was honored by Essence with a Black Woman in Hollywood Award, along with Lena Waithe, Tiffany Haddish, and Danai Gurira. By spring, Thompson and close friend Janelle Monáe had starred as soulmates in the Afro-futuristic love story Dirty Computer. Whenever Monáe performs Pink live, fans continue to call out Thompson's name. The actress would later open up about her attraction to both women and men, and the news dominated before attention shifted to her summer hit, the weirdly fantastic flick Sorry to Bother You. This project was so exciting. Thompson says proudly, "I've seen so many films that take place in the world of magical realism, but they are usually so exclusionary. Yet when asked if she identifies as an artist, she's abashed at first. I guess I identify as someone who makes a living acting," she says finally. Thompson definitely stays busy. 12 weeks ago, she headed across the pond to a film called Men in Black spinoff with Chris Hemsworth. So let's go ahead and move on and dive into It's Time to Heal. 21% of black women have been raped and 38% have experienced other forms of sexual violence. Historically, our pain and suffering have been suppressed or ignored, but no more. Now is the time for sisters to shine a light on these deep, dark realities, call out predators, get healed, and prevent harm against the next generation. We have much work to do. And there is a series of different articles on this. Of course, we will not be able to get through them all today, but of course, next week we will continue on with this conversation. So first thing first, this first article is written by Tarana Burke, and she's the founder of the hashtag MeToo movement. It's called The Movement and the Future. Tarana Burke, creator of the MeToo movement, sings a black girl song, serves up marching orders, and raps black women in light, love, and joy. Of all things, joy. This is what Tarana Burke, the Bronx-born activist and architect of the Me Too movement, wants for us, the daughters and mothers and aunties and friends who suffer sexual violence. Back in 2006, she dedicated her life to help sexual assault survivors in marginalized communities get the services, support, and encouragement they need to move past sexual trauma and heal. The chords she struck were wrapped in a simple but radical concept. Instead of seeking punishment of the perpetrator and retribution, focusing on commiseration with empathy for the victim and two of the most powerful tools to help survivors of rape, incest, sexual assault, and sexual harassment pull themselves together out of the darkness and look toward the sun. When survivors need most, or what survivors need most, Burke insisted, is to know that they are inherently good and that they deserve to be happy. That joy comes in the morning and in the morning. For the longest time, few danced to Burke's tune. The advocacy organization she co-founded, Just Be Organization, Just Be Incorporated, through which she launched the Me Too mantra, was playing mostly to a crowd that was already intimately involved in assisting survivors. She recalls having to practically beg to be part of programs that would help her reach the women and girls who weren't part of the choir, specifically poor Black women and girls. In Burke's Harlem apartment rests a box of ladders she personally penned in 2007. To celebrity sexual abuse survivors Queen Latifah, Mary J. Blige, Gabrielle Union, Fantasia, Missy Elliott, requesting their help to engage with young girls who look up to them and need to hear how the stars ultimately triumphed over the devastation of their assaults. Support was scarce. Critical funding needed to underwrite her book was nearly non-existent. Burke kept singing the Black girl song, even though it seemed no one was listening. But what a difference a hashtag makes. In the past year, Me Too became both lightning rod and rallying cry when actress Alyssa Milano, responding to bombshell allegations that storied Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein had sexually assaulted and harassed a roster of movie starlets, took to Twitter to encourage followers to retweet her status with hashtag MeToo if they'd ever experienced sexual harassment or assault. Within days, more than 12 million people had used the hashtag or liked or commented on hashtag MeToo posts across Facebook and Twitter, with Milano being credited with starting the conversation. But Black women who knew of Burke's work were quick to tap Milano on her social media shoulder, demanding that the former sitcom star acknowledge that Burke had been propelling the Me Too conversation for a decade prior. Soon, Burke became the face of an international dialogue that traversed social media and entered the halls of everywhere, from the pulpit to the boardroom, to schools and universities, to Congress, and right on up to the presidency. Some of the same celebrities whose stories Burke had used in her Just Be Incorporated workshops were now praising her as she took her message to spaces she'd never imagined, inhabiting the Oscars and Golden Globes, Times Square on New Year's Eve, and Time Magazine's 2017 Person of the Year edition, in which she was featured in the cover story. Toronto will continue to do this work, but the stage will be bigger and the microphone turned all the way up. Gabrielle Union wrote in Time's 2018 100 Most Influential People issue about Burke's right here, right now activism. She's not even going to bring more seats to the table. She's going to turn the table over and build a new one. Burke is still a bit shell-shocked by all the attention and by the confirmation that her idea, her work, and her passion has taken flight. She admits that some days she struggles with imposter syndrome, wondering, am I the right person? It's a weird feeling, she says. I struggle with this, the anxiety of who gets to do the things that they want to do. That really doesn't happen for us, except now it does. That Black girl's song Burke has been singing for oh so long is being played in full blast. Finally, hips are swaying to her rhythm. Burke's passion is deeply personal. The 45-year-old mom of one daughter, Kaya Burke, herself is a survivor of sexual assaults committed against her at age 6, between the ages of 9 and 12, and again at 25. Though she does not publicly detail the abuse, she did share with Essence that the repeated attacks stole her ability to believe that she was inherently a good person who was capable of being happy. After reading Maya Angelou's autobiography, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, in which the celebrated poet describes being muted after being raped as a child. A then 14-year-old Burke became convinced that she should assume a persona to mask what she thought was her fault. "I decided to be quiet," she explains. "I decided I'm going to be a good girl. I'm going to be a smart girl. I'm going to be the best so people won't know." It would be Angelou's recitation of her extraordinary poem, Phenomenal Woman, that helped the teenage Burke evolve in how she processed her repeated abuse. I was like, well, if she believes she's a phenomenal woman after being raped as a child, then how do you get to that? Recalls Burke. "I thought, if I can figure this out, I'm going to be fine." In pursuit of an answer, she wrote in a journal a profound question: how does a body that holds pain also hold joy? Still, even as she was developing Me Too, Burke says she still felt useless. She thought, at least I can save some other girl because it's too late for me. It wasn't until she gave birth to her daughter, Kaya, that she did the deep personal work necessary to find that joy, to feel as though her life is worth something, to truly believe that she matters. I started by writing down all the times that I felt happy or joyful or felt some sense of wholeness, she says. For example, her daughter jumping in her arms and screaming, "Mommy," laughing with friends, fresh braids. "I created the joy that I had," she remembers. "I realized I needed to acknowledge it and call it what it was and revel in it, even if it didn't look like what television and books told me my personal joy should look like. It was mine." It is not lost on Burke that everything she experienced is directly connected. Her abuse, her trauma, her healing, her advocacy on behalf of other women. To this moment in the Me Too movement, the thought brings her to tears. "I definitely see how God works," she says. At this very public stage of her life, Burke is preparing to move to a more secure home. Seeking safety is no overreach. Since becoming the face of Me Too, she has been confronted at speaking engagements, chased down the street by both admirers and foes, and had hate mail from strangers showing up at her front door, including an empty box she feared might be a bomb. Her outspokenness about convicted sexual predator Bill Cosby has earned her the righteous indignation of her supporters, Black people in particular, and threats too. Precautions must be taken. The comments she's received from some Black men are especially hurtful. "The number one thing that Black men say to me is, nobody sexually harassed your ugly explicit. Who would want to have sex with you?" says Burke. "I've had to re-collaborate because I was just kind of going along in my regular joyful life," she says. "I wish that Black men could feel about me the way I feel about them. I wish they would understand that I'm not attacking them." Meanwhile, her advocacy work still needs to get done. Indeed, Burke has partnered with the New York Women's Foundation to raise $25 million to award grants to organizations focused on ending sexual violence. So far, she has raised $1 million. She has also received $100,000 each from Billie Jean King and Robin Roberts toward her work to combat sexual violence. In addition, Burke has a website called Me Too MeToMVMT.org, and that's MeToMVMT.org, that provides resources for survivors of sexual violence. Another one of her projects is creating leadership training programs for activists who want to affect change in their communities through legislation or the establishment of crisis centers and healing circles, safe places where survivors can share their stories and get whole. In the meantime, Burke continues the work of getting herself whole, too. As she discusses her healing with Essence, Burke receives a phone call from poet and playwright Nozaki Shang, author of For Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough. The series of poems includes Burke's favorite text, Dark Phrases, in which the Lady in Brown character insists that somebody, anybody, sing a girl's song. Burke is blown away. Shang is her hero, and Burke said as much at the 2018 Afropunk Fest in Brooklyn. When asked why she kept centering the Me Too movement on black women and girls, Burke credited Shang, who was in the audience, with imploring that we all sing a black girl song. I feel like those were marching orders, Burke recalls saying, if I don't sing our song, then who will? Sing on, sister, sing on. And this article was written by Deneen Milner, and she is a New York Times bestselling author and the host of A Seat at the Table, a black woman's talk show on Georgia Public Broadcasting. So continuing on with this section of It's Our Time to Heal, we're going to move on to another story. And this next story is called On the Ground. While the Me Too movement has increased awareness of sexual assault, these four women-led organizations are on the front lines fighting for our communities every day. Indira M. Hennard, the D.C. Rape Crisis Center, DCRCC.org. So Hennard is the executive director of the DC Rape Crisis Center, which was founded in 1972. The Washington, DC program runs a hotline and offers counseling and training. It is also a prominent player in the DC Coalition to End Sexual Violence. Beginnings. The DC Rape Crisis Center was birthed on the heels of the burgeoning women's movement when the notion of having the right to be safe and free from sexual violence was very much a political act, says Hennard. The center has historically been led by black women, and we are celebrating 46 years of providing survivor-centered and community-led service. What keeps Hennard going? She says, I feel grateful that I get to do this work. I see survivors who are looking for a safe community to process what happened to them, she says. We facilitate healing for survivors of sexual violence who have experienced the unimaginable. The work we do is sacred and unscripted. My hope is that survivors know that recovery is possible and that there is no straight path to healing. Joanne N. Smith, Girls for Gender Equity, GGENYC.org. So Smith's Brooklyn-based Girls for Gender Equity, also known as GGE, provides black girls, including cisgender and trans young women, with leadership and community organizing skills through counseling, an after-school program, and a girls' advisory council. The 16-year-old organization also conducts research on sexual harassment in schools and fights the push-out of black girls due to biased disciplinary practices. The beginnings. She says, I started GGE because I saw a lack of opportunities for black girls to participate in activities that would support their holistic development, says Smith. Her goal was to create an organization that would empower girls to become self-determined leaders as women. what would propel Smith? GGE deals with girls being sexually harassed in school and sexually abused at home, Smith says. Some of our young people are being coerced by pimps on their way to school. What keeps me going is that the light that shines brightly in these girls' eyes needs to remain lit. I want to revolutionize how the community views and treats black girls and denies their rights to be children. Success means living in a world in which the narratives, needs, and strength of black girls are reflected in policies, practices, and resources. Camilla Johnson of Sasha Institute, SashaCenter.org. Johnson's Detroit area, Sasha, also known as Sexual Assault Services for Holistic Healing and Awareness Center, provides culturally specific support groups. It also does corporate and community anti-violence trainings and equips survivors with health referrals and resources. Her beginnings. After getting my bachelor's and master's degree in social work, I worked at a sexual assault agency housed in the Detroit Police Department, she says. I would see health care providers treating black women as if they were subhuman and basically unrapeable. Johnson realized that consciously or subconsciously, these providers held a stereotype of black women as sexual wanton beings who couldn't be raped because they were always willing. She knew she had to do something. What called Johnson to do this work? My mother suffered from mental illness, she says. Every time she was hospitalized, other family members took care of me and my sisters. This is when I was molested. Being a victim put me at further risk. I was sexually assaulted by one boy at 15 and another at 19. I dropped out of high school and was out of control, but I was determined to not let this trauma control my life. Creating Sasha Center was just one way of doing that. The Tillett Sisters, a long way home, a long walk, or long walk home, alongwalkhome.org. The two sisters, the Tillett sisters, they started Chicago-based A Long Walk Home in 2003 to provide at-risk black girls with art therapy, emotional support, and tools for community organizing. It's a signature program or the touring stage show Story of a Rape Survivor and the Girlfriends Leadership Institute, a year-long experience for middle and high school girls. Beginnings. So A Long Walk Home grew out of SOARS, which had a simple and generous premise. What keeps the sisters going? As hard as it is to give voice and space to or open doors for these younger people, we just couldn't be more excited. Our programs are rooted in black feminism. We really value creating sisterhood on stage for SOARS and with the Girlfriends Leadership Institute. So it looks like that we've run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Nicole Hunter reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, www.trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long until next time.